Beverly Allett, also known as the Angel of Death, was convicted of murder for 4 children, attempted murder of 3 other children, and causing grievous bodily harm to another 6 children. The crimes were committed over the span of 59 days from February to April 1991 at Grantham and Kesteven Hospital, Lincolnshire. Beverly Allett was born on October 4th, 1968, in the village of Corby Glen, just outside of Lincolnshire. It was a very small community, so everyone knew everyone. She was one of 4 children, of which she was the second oldest. She was known as being an attention seeker from a very young age, however, she was very much average growing up. There was nothing that particularly stood out about her, and so she used external injuries as a way to get attention. She would go out of her way to injure herself more than others would. Other than that, there was nothing remarkable about her childhood. She did, however, fail her 11 plus, and as a consequence, she went to the local secondary school. She left school at 16 years old with little to no qualifications. She knew someone who worked at Grantham Hospital, and they lent her books and equipment that she would need to join the nursing percussion, which she did when she was 17, 18 years old. Whilst on her pre-nursing course, she worked part-time at a local pub, where she actually met several of her boyfriends. Intriguingly, a boyfriend's nickname for Beverly was The Fable, because she kept inventing stories about herself. To supplement her need for attention, to be the centre of attention and have people sympathise with her, the pub that she worked at, The Fighting Cocks, is where she met her boyfriend Steve Biggs. She went on to beat him up quite badly whilst they were engaged. She humiliated him, she harmed him, and she was aggressive. Her unusual behaviour showed a remarkable likeness to the symptoms of a rare medical disorder, Munchausen syndrome. With this disorder, the person will try and draw attention to themselves by harming themselves. It's also known today as factitious disorder, the conscious production of fake symptoms but based on unconscious motives. In September 1988, she was accepted by Grantham and Kesteven Hospital as a training state enrolled nurse. And as soon as she enrolls, bizarre incidents begin to occur in the medical college dormitories. Feces were placed in the fridge, under the cooker, and curtains were set on fire. They were never specifically identified as being the work of Beverly. All of the students were threatened of being removed from the course when no culprit came forward. After this warning, the incidents stopped. Whilst on the course, her lies about injuries and pain continued to increase. She was off with injuries that were relatively minor. She would be off with the flu or a cold. She used any excuse to escape her studies. During the time of her training course, between 1988 and 1990, she would have had about 160 sickness days. As a result, she just scraped a pass. She then decided to train as a children's nurse. She was, however, rejected for that position. She was told it was because she hadn't had enough experience dealing with ill children. She does, however, manage to find a position on Ward 4 where she can get the necessary experience. Ward 4 was a paediatric unit of the hospital. There was chronic understaffing at Grantham and Kesteven Hospital, so therefore they need state-enrolled nurses. Because they're in such dire need of staff, Beverly is given a job without having had her health screening or a CRB check. On February 18th, 1991, Beverly began her 6-month contract at the hospital. She was keen to learn and eager to please. At the time, it also happened to be a busy period. During the first couple of weeks of Beverly beginning her contract, there were multiple collapses in young children. The situation did not improve, and 5 more children suffered a total of 7 collapses, one unfortunately passing away. This was 9-week-old Becky Phillips. She came in with a tummy upset and was brought to the hospital because she'd been a premature baby. She was checked over, and once her problems had disappeared, she was prepared to go home. She was put in the care of Beverly Allett, and when she went to go home, she went clammy, grisly, and collapsed. She was rushed back to the hospital, where she did unfortunately pass away. The parents, worried that her twin sister was suffering from the same illness, brought her in as a precaution. She inexplicably stopped breathing twice and had to be resuscitated, but sadly suffered permanent brain damage from the resuscitation. Beverly was regarded as an angel because she had found the problem, gotten the medical advice, and gotten her treated. Alet was at the centre of attention again, miraculously, always the first to the scene, giving parents the impression she was always going the extra mile. The parents of Becky Phillips thought so highly of her that they asked her to be the godmother of their other child. March 1991, in Grantham, 5-month-old Paul Crompton suffered from a minor chest infection for a couple of weeks, and so unfortunately had to be taken to the hospital because he was not getting any better. When his parents took him to the hospital, he was kept overnight as a precaution, but within hours his condition became serious. His heart had come to a complete stop, and so doctors were called and he was resuscitated. Miraculously, he recovered and responded well to treatment. He had suffered from a hypovolemic attack. It had been totally unexpected, and hospital staff were perplexed. Paul began to recover, and so the nurses began to prepare for him to go home. Beverly Allett, being the nurse on duty, went to take down the drip, and once again, he had to be resuscitated. He was successfully revived again. After this incident, he became extremely stable, and so they began to prepare for him to go home again. Paul unfortunately suffered from another hypovolemic attack, and so the staff, completely bewildered, decided to send him to Queen's Medical Centre, a larger hospital where he quickly recovered. When he suffered from that last attack, a doctor took some of his blood, which was sent off to Cardiff University for an analysis. To make sure he got to the hospital safely, Beverly volunteered to go with Paul's mother for support. On the 12th of April, 16 days after his blood had been sent for analysis, Paul's blood was finally analysed. The examining scientist had found that there was 500 milliunits per litre of insulin in his blood. This is extremely bizarre because in a child it should be between 10 and 15 milliunits per litre. Since Paul had recovered spontaneously, they concluded that it was either a rogue sample or he had been suffering from insulinoma, which had been corrected. So nothing was done. None of the staff suspected foul play because it isn't abnormal for people to pass away in hospitals. Over the following 2 weeks, another 10 children collapsed, and fortunately, there was another death. Liam Taylor, 7 weeks old, was the first to pass away. He had been brought in with a mild chest infection and within hours of being in Ward 4, had inexplicably collapsed with respiratory failure. His condition had deteriorated very quickly. He passed away in his father's arms. Just 2 weeks later, 11-year-old Timothy Hardwick, a severely disabled child, was admitted after having a fit at school. He was admitted into Beverly's care whilst another senior nurse did the drug round. She hadn't even finished the drug round when Beverly called out that there had been a problem and Timothy had turned blue and was barely breathing. Resuscitation was attempted, but unfortunately was not successful. Just 5 days later, 15-month-old Kaylee Desmond suffered 2 unexplained respiratory arrests. The first was unexpected and the second was bewildering. Concerned that they didn't have an answer, she was transferred to Nottingham General Hospital, where miraculously she quickly recovered. On April the 22nd, 15-month-old asthmatic Claire Peck was brought in with a severe attack. She had been to the hospital multiple times before due to her asthma, but she always got better and went home. After being checked, the doctor left to reassure the family that she was on the mend. Claire was left alone with Beverly and an alarm was raised almost immediately saying that Claire had stopped breathing. She was resuscitated successfully and on the road to recovery again. The doctor leaves once again to speak to the family and once again, within 90 seconds, the alarm is pulled. The child had stopped breathing. Unfortunately, this time they were unable to resuscitate her successfully and she passed away. With no medical explanations, the doctors suspected foul play and they contacted the police. On the 30th of April 1991, a detective receives a call suggesting that there may be something untoward happening at Grantham Hospital. The initial meeting at Grantham Hospital with the detective took place on Friday, the 3rd of May 1991. A professional was asked to review 13 cases, of which he considered 4 suspicious and 1 as foul play. Later in May, the police began to interview staff at the hospital. However, speaking to parents and employees, nothing got clearer. On the 7th of May, Beverly was interviewed and nothing seemed particularly suspicious about her. Investigations followed and some detectives were sent to Nottingham Hospital to find out more information. At that hospital, they discovered that they kept blood samples of children that were admitted to check for genetic defects and things like that. The samples were supposed to be destroyed every 3 to 6 months. They managed to find 9 out of the 13 children's blood samples. These samples were sent away to a professor at the University of Suffolk. Among these samples was one of Paul Crampton's, whose blood was tested for a second time. The professor discovered that Paul's insulin level was not 500, but 47,000, which is the second highest ever recorded in the world. They began to investigate as to why the results were so different. They discovered that the machine at Cardiff was only calibrated to 500 and that it had gone off the scales. It was concluded that the insulin had to have been injected, and so suggested there was a killer on that ward. A medical report prior to 1991 about 2 cases where babies were administered insulin and various other drugs, and it had been the mother who had done it intentionally. This was coined Munchausen syndrome by proxy, when an individual creates false symptoms in somebody else, usually somebody they're in charge of. Beverly Allitt was diagnosed with Munchausen syndrome earlier in her childhood. The professor tested all of the blood samples, and Paul's blood was not the only one that was abnormal. Becky Phillips had had 9,000 units. Other samples had had high levels of potassium and lignocaine. Various drugs were found in these samples. All of this evidence cemented the idea that they may be a killer on Ward 4. The hospital was supplied insulin on demand by the pharmacies and kept in fridges around the hospital. There was one key to fit all of the fridges, and every single ward had one. The key for Ward 4 had gone missing, and the last nurse to have had it was Beverly Allitt. She did claim to have passed it on. The detectives created timelines of who had been looking after the children and when. A pattern began to emerge. Each and every time Beverly Allitt had been left alone with the child collapsed. Beverly was now the prime suspect. On the 21st of May 1991 at 7 a.m, the police arrest Beverly Allitt at her home on the suspicion of stealing the insulin key for the fridge and for the attempted murder of Paul Crampton. She was completely calm and collected during the whole ordeal. Whilst she is brought in for questioning, officers search her house and discover a syringe and find the ward allocation book. She did not admit to any of the offences. She did, however, distance herself and put other people into the frame for each child. The police struggled to find any incriminating evidence, and she was released pending further investigation. The families of many of the children antagonised the police. One family did hire private investigators to investigate the police. With Beverly being the prime suspect, she was placed on leave from Ward 4. Whilst the investigation continues, Allitt moves in with a close friend, Tracy. The attacks stopped as soon as she left the hospital, and they started at the address she'd just moved into. Bleach was found in the children's beds, and tablets were given to the dog, and he suffered from seizures. There was an incident where they had gone to the market and one of the children complained about feeling ill, and he collapsed and was brought to the hospital in Peterborough. It was later concluded that he had a hypovolemic attack, something that Paul had had just months earlier, and he'd passed away from it. They suspect it was the drink that he had had before leaving for the market that Beverly had made him. The police were called by the grandmother, and Allitt was once again taken into custody. By November 1991, just 7 months after the first attack, the police were in a position to charge Beverly Allitt, and she was charged with 13 counts, 4 of murder, 8 of attempted murder, and 1 of grievously bodily harm. She had no reaction whatsoever to this news. Over the next 15 months, she was held at Wakefield Prison, where she awaited trial. On the 15th of February 1993, the trial began. At court, Allitt pled not guilty. She did not take the stand, and she stayed silent to the charges that had been placed against her. She was pronounced guilty of 13 counts and was given 13 life sentences. She remains in prison to this day. The case of Beverly Allitt just proves that nature and nurture have a massive impact in creating a serial killer. Beverly Allitt, growing up, had a pretty normal childhood. Other than wanting attention constantly, she was pretty average. She never had any family problems or anything like that. Beverly Allitt is an example of nature because it was a genetic problem that caused her to become a serial killer rather than nurture. She developed a mental problem of Munchausen syndrome, which basically causes her to seek attention all the time and cause harm to herself to get that attention. When she no longer got attention from harming herself, she went on and did Munchausen syndrome by proxy, which is harming others for that attention. And due to her being a pediatric nurse and all these children coming in and out of the ward, it was the perfect opportunity for her to do so. Nothing particular happened in her childhood and within it in order for her to actually develop into a serial killer. There was nothing bad about it, no abuse, nothing. So I believe that Beverly Allitt shows that genetics have a massive impact on whether or not you can develop into a serial killer. What I believe is that there's a genetic portion, and if it is nurtured growing up, then that is what makes a serial killer.